Licenses for practice have been revoked this year for 11 Oregon doctors, the most in any year since the board was created in 1889. The licenses were revoked for drug and alcohol abuse, medical incompetency, and making sexual advances toward patients. 9 of the 11 are still practicing under probation. The weather outlook for Portland, Vancouver, and vicinity is for fair skies tonight, with a low about 35. Fog tomorrow morning will give way to sunny skies in the afternoon. Tomorrow's high about 65. Zero chance for rain. The current temperature in Portland is 60 degrees. And that's news of the Northwest. I'm Howard Huntley. Keep tuned as the candidates for governor meet in debate.
Your Northwest Ford dealer has a special set of keys, test driver keys, for people who want to know what the all-new 1979 Pinto is like firsthand. So stop by your Ford dealer. Tell them you came to road test a 79 Pinto. Tell them all you want is 15 minutes behind the wheel. But before you take off on your test drive, check out the standard equipment on this new Pinto. Items like rack and pinion steering, standard. Electronic ignition, standard. Tinted glass, standard. Push button radio, standard. Electric rear defroster, standard. Try the Pinto on a Northwest freeway. Slip it into the toughest parking spot in the city. You're the judge all the way.
This is Governor Bob Straub. In less than 2 weeks, we'll be voting on many important decisions. I believe Oregon is at a crossroads this November. We will be making decisions affecting our children, our schools, our cities, the use of our land, and many other important areas of our lives. Perhaps the most important issue in this election is the choice of the person to lead the state into the 1980s. Here, the issue is leadership. I've studied the issues, come to decisions, and spoken out clearly. I believe the people of Oregon deserve a governor who will make decisions and stand by them.
I am Senator Victor Retia, candidate for governor. The central issue in this campaign is a new brand of constructive leadership. Leadership coming from a total understanding of both government and the people. Leadership with innovative and exciting new ways in solving our problems. Leadership that understands livability includes both our human as well as natural resources. Leadership that listens to you and not just at campaign time. I do understand government. I have proposed new solutions. I treasure Oregon's livability, and I have listened to you. It is time for a tear.
Good afternoon. I'm Brian Jennings in the KXL News Center, and with me are Governor Bob Straub and his Republican challenger, State Senator Vic Attia. For the next 45 minutes, the two candidates will debate some of the top issues facing Oregonians 12 days from now. Each candidate will present a brief opening statement followed by the actual debate. These are the chosen subject matters for debate. Number 1, taxation, Measure 6 and 11. Number 2, the death penalty, whether or not it should be restored in Oregon. Number 3, the wilderness issue, referred to as Rare 2. Number 4, the denturism issue, should denturists be licensed in Oregon? Finally, the two candidates will debate the general topic of state government spending. Following the debate, we will be accepting your questions. We will provide our telephone number, and a bit later in this program, we'll present that to you. We welcome KSRV Radio in Ontario, where this debate is being heard live. The radio stations across the state will carry excerpts on a delayed basis. We now begin with opening statements. Governor Straub, by the coin toss, won the flip and has elected to speak second. Therefore, Senator Attia, you have the following 3 minutes for your opening speech.
Good afternoon. We are now rushing to the last days before November 7th, and the decisions that Oregonians must make must not be made purely on the last-minute image-making. We must not let the issues fade away from our minds, those issues that have been discussed for months during the primary and general election. Let me take my time now to tell you what I have been talking about all of these months and throughout all of Oregon. I have suggested that we deal with the energy problem not waiting for the federal government, that in fact we, as moving into the alternatives, both by incentives and especially in research, can in fact develop solar, geothermal, methane, wood waste, all of those kinds of things that will provide added energy for Oregonians. I've talked about jobs, but jobs all over Oregon, and for Oregon businesses that are here, that we should be just as enthusiastic and do no less for those businesses as we do and work with industry we're trying to bring into the state. I proposed an innovative way to approach the matter of crime, and that is not to fight crime or pick up the criminal, but to keep the flow of going into the field of criminality. And I made some positive recommendations there where we, government, and you, the people, can help in a constructive program. I have spoken about timber management, one of the things that's very important to us in Oregon, and that we, in fact, could no longer have our timber managed by the Office of Management and Budget in Washington, D.C., or the Eastern politicians, but we use the expertise that we have in our state. Just recently, I said that I would firmly move into workers' comp, and that we must bring down the cost of workers' comp. In both the area of jobs and workers' comp, that meant jobs for people, jobs for Oregonians in their own town. We must not put any barrier to allowing that to occur. Efficient and effective government is one I think that you've heard before, but I am a 20-year legislator. I know about government. I can deal with it. But finally, and I think more importantly, I have talked to people and I've listened to people all over this state. I have heard what they had to say. I have expressed their feelings and their views. I think I have dealt innovatively and differently with the issues that you as Oregonians want a governor of Oregon to do. Therefore, I am asking for your vote on November 7th. I believe you will be proud of your vote when you cast it, Atiyah for governor. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Senator Atiyah. Now, Governor Straub, you have the following 3 minutes for your opening presentation.
The state of Oregon is at the crossroads. The next 4 years are very critical to those of us in Oregon who care about the future of this state. The next 4 years are very critical to those of us who care about what happens to senior citizens, to what happens to our environment. There's some very important programs that we have to be working on. We can't afford a governor who vacillates, who takes up 3.5 months to make up his mind whether he supports or opposes ballot measure number 6. You know that my wife and I moved to Oregon 31 years ago, and during this time I've worked to make Oregon better. I've worked for better service for senior citizens. I've worked to improve the schools. I've worked for a better environment. And I've worked to improve the industry and the economy and the jobs of the state of Oregon. Oregon needs a leader in the next 4 years. And the real issue of this campaign is leadership. This is an important year for Oregon and for those of us who care about this state. The decisions we make on Election Day could have a profound impact on our way of life in this state. This year there's been a lot said about taxes and government spending, but these are not the only issues facing us today. Each generation, each year, we face new challenges, and each time we're challenged, we're called upon to respond decisively, to act so that the Oregon we pass on to others tomorrow will be as beautiful and livable as the Oregon we have enjoyed today. 4 years ago, we were faced with an economic crisis. I campaigned for governor on the platform of more jobs and environmental protection. Today, we have cut unemployment in half. We have 55 new clean industries in Oregon, and over 79 Oregon companies have expanded. We have cleaner air, cleaner water, and sound land use planning. Tonight, we will discuss these and other issues, issues currently facing all of us, issues on which we will vote on November 7th. Regardless of which way you vote, one thing is certain. Oregon government will go on, and we will need continued decisive leadership for our future. Whatever your decisions on this issue will be, I'm prepared to carry them out. But at the same time, I'm not prepared to abandon my belief that the people of Oregon want a clean environment, want to attract new clean jobs, want to continue good public education. I'm running for re-election because all of this is important, and I want to continue to build that kind of Oregon. Furthermore, I pledge to continue the tradition of independent leadership the people of Oregon have always valued. On Election Day, I would appreciate your vote.
Thank you very much, Governor Straub. We have the opening statements. Now, after a one-minute commercial timeout, the two candidates will come back and debate taxation. We now focus on the two highly publicized ballot measures, Ballot Measure 6 and Ballot Measure 11, the property tax limitation measures before voters. Senator Atiyah, you have the first question for your opponent.
Governor, in August you discovered property tax relief was more prominent in the minds of the people than you had thought. Now you have said if both 6 and 11 fail, you will not support a tax limitation measure in the next legislature. I can't help but believe you still have not heard the message that over 200,000 Oregonians who are trying to get through to you about the needs for property tax relief. Now, what do you intend to do if both tax measures fail?
I discovered the need for property tax relief in Oregon when I was campaigning for the governorship in 1974, and I've worked very hard to increase budgets for basic school support, for city revenue sharing, for the homeowner and renter property tax relief plan, programs that lighten the burden on the property taxpayer. And I would point out that these are budget appropriations of which many you voted for. If both 11 and 6 are voted down, it would be my recommendation to the legislature that they continue to divert state funds to programs that help local government meet their responsibilities so that the load is lighter on the property taxpayer. This is the way I would move, and I'd also recommend that the legislature adopt a program for limiting spending on government at all levels. I think this is the message of the people of Oregon, that they want less government, less spending, less interference.
Senator Atiyah, you now have a follow-up question for Governor Straub.
Basically, Governor, this is the same program we have been living with now for a long period of time, and which I believe was the reason we had to have an initiative petition by the people of the state of Oregon. It seems important to me that we come back with a specific program if both fails. How can you justify a continuation of the same program that apparently has not done the job?
I think that we're making real headway in Oregon in lowering property taxes. In fact, there are 7 counties last year that had lower property taxes than the year before. I read in the Eugene Register-Guard that Lane County's taxes were down. I read in the Oregon Journal today the headlines that the property taxes in Oregon are coming down. I think that we are making headway, and I think we have a very fair system of taxation in the state of Oregon. But I do recognize that we need to continue to shift property taxes from property over on to income tax. This is because the property tax is a very regressive tax. The income tax is based on ability to pay and is much more fair.
The order now reverses, and Governor Straub, you have a question now for your opponent, Senator Atiyah.
Senator Atiyah, as you know, I've taken a very firm position in support of property tax relief for homeowners and renters, and I initiated a plan for limiting the growth of state and local government spending. In contrast, Senator, as an October 23rd editorial in the East Oregonian, which endorsed my candidacy, pointed out, and I quote, Atiyah waffled on whether he supported Measure 6, voted to put Measure 11 on the ballot during this session, then endorsed Measure 6, dash, sort of, end quote. And just last week, the Oregon Journal reported that you suggested that maybe voting in opposition to both measures might be the right answer. Senator, if you have finally arrived at a clear position on this subject, can you tell us what it is?
Senator, I will give you 15 extra seconds. The question was lengthy.
Thank you very much. To record history, going back to July when Ballot 6 became a reality, I said then that I would accept the principle of 6 and would look at the language. The governor, incidentally, at that time said he opposed both the principle and the language of 6. Before the special session, I specified a definitive change in ballot measure number 6, which I recommended, and I took to the special session, and I fought that battle. I said also at the same time that unless there was an acceptable alternative, that I would come back to the cleaned-up version of 6. I did that on Thursday after the Saturday adjournment of the legislative session. I think that the governor knows those things quite well, and that I have done what I said I would do in an orderly way, and I have kept faith with my promises.
Governor Straub, you have a follow-up question.
Senator, as you know, I have expressed my concern that Ballot Measure 6, if passed, would undermine local control because it would require the legislature to make decisions now made by local government, schools, and fire districts. In contrast, Senator, you have at various times encouraged people to support Ballot Measure Number 6. If Ballot Measure 6 passes, how much of the 1.5% are you going to recommend to the legislature should be spent on our cities, how much on our counties, how much on our schools, how much on our fire districts, and how much for other special districts?
Governor, I've recommended that there be a change in ballot 6, and unlike you, I am convinced that both the Oregon legislature and the people of the state of Oregon will accept those changes. The changes, in fact, make that the least costly of all of the plans submitted to the special session, down to $300 million versus well over $500 million for ballot measure number 11, and that's only at the beginning. On that basis, there is no question in my mind that we can deal with local government and state government in a way that would tighten the belt, as I think Oregonians want done, but not kill either of them off. So the plan I propose is a responsible one, and we can live with it.
Now, after a one-minute commercial timeout, Governor Straub and Senator Attia will be back debating the death penalty issue. Ballot measure number 8, if passed, would restore the death penalty in Oregon for premeditated or calculated murder. Governor Straub, we now reverse the order of questioning, and you have the first question for your opponent.
Senator, as you know, I have firmly opposed the death penalty. I have said consistently that only the poor are put to death. And I repeat that I forcefully disagree with a legal system that sets up one system of justice for the poor and one system of justice for the rich. On the contrary, Senator, throughout this campaign, you have supported the death penalty. As you know, Oregon has had the death penalty 4 different times. Can you name one person who was not poor and not served by court-appointed attorneys who has ever been put to death in Oregon?
Well, Governor, no, I can't do that. And I think the governor knows that, but I think it's important to remember that my position in regard to the death penalty is, in fact, looking at what appears to me to be a case for the death penalty. I've said consistently I do not want to kill someone, I want to prevent a murder. The governor needs to realize there were over 125 murders last year, and at the present time we know that the rate of murder per 100,000 in the state of Oregon is higher than it was when the death penalty was removed. I think there's a cause and effect there, and I think that it's important to remember that.
We now have a follow-up question, Governor Straub.
Senator, as you may know, Warden Duffy of San Quentin Prison and our own Warden Hoyt Cupp, two of the most respected wardens in the nation, have gone on record opposed to the death penalty, and they say that their interviews with inmates on the death row indicate that they find no evidence of influence on their action by the death penalty. In contrast, you are supporting the death penalty. Do you know any prison warden or any person responsible for administering a prison system who supports the death penalty?
Again, I don't, Governor, and I think that it's fairly obvious that that would be the case, but I have seen studies that are finally coming out that prove, in fact, at least on a theoretical basis, that the presence of a death penalty is a deterrent to the crime of murder. That, of course, is a matter of opinion, but I feel very strongly about it. And when I look at the increase of murders in Oregon, and the people who, of course, are no longer with us and dead, if I can prevent just one of those murders, I think that's an important thing for those of us that are humane people and want to save lives.
We now reverse the order of questioning. If you're joining us, you're listening to a debate between Governor Straub and Senator Attia from the KXL News Center in Portland. Senator Attia, you now may question your opponent.
Since you are categorically opposed to the death penalty, if it passes, can we expect you as governor to take unilateral action and commute all death sentences opposed by the courts during your term if you are reelected governor?
If the death penalty is passed and if I'm reelected, I would have to pass a judgment on each individual case individually based on the merit of the case. I would not supersede the will of the people. I would try to carry out the will of the people and administer justice as the people had dictated. But I would reserve the right to use my own judgment as the law provides, as the Constitution provides, and pass judgment on individual cases as they arose.
Could I guess then, Governor, by that answer that you now feel there are some circumstances that call for the death penalty?
I would pass judgment on individual situations depending on the merits, and I would not commit myself ahead of time to any definite course of action.
From the death penalty issue, We turn to the wilderness question. Next year, Congress is expected to decide what additional U.S. forest land should be designated as wilderness and excluded from logging. In Oregon, 3 million acres, much of it commercial forest land, could be affected by a decision. This is the subject matter we now open up to the candidates. And Governor Straub, we now give you the first question.
Senator, as you know, I've written to President Carter saying that we cannot afford to reduce in any significant way the commercial forest base now existing in Oregon. I also firmly stated to President Carter that there were areas of unique wilderness value that should remain in Oregon's wilderness system. Please allow me to quote your position, Senator Tia, as it was reported in the Oregonian of Tuesday, October 17th, and I quote. Atiyah said he wrote the U.S. Forest Service that he feels Oregon's current 1.3 million acres is about as much as is needed in the state, end quote. Senator, there are 2.9 million acres under study. Some of these are in the high altitude areas in the Oregon Cascades without significant timberland involved, some in the rimrock countries in eastern Oregon. Why do you want to keep these areas out of our wilderness system?
Governor, you didn't finish at least the statement, although you may not have had it. I said that we have gone about as far with wilderness as we ought to unless there is some unique natural resource that needed protection. And so I included that as a possibility in terms of what might else be added, but it had to have a certain uniqueness that would call for just that. We have about 10% of the available area now in wilderness. And I think for those who want to both admire and save that for the future, that appeared to me to be about as much as we needed.
Governor Straub, you have a follow-up question.
Senator, I don't mean for a moment to imply that the forest industry has bought your position, but do you think you can be really impartial in weighing the merits of whether or not fragile areas should be put into wilderness when you have received over $50,000 in this campaign from the timber industry?
Governor, I can be just as objective as you have been because you received thousands of dollars from the timber industry yourself in the primary. And beyond that, the suggestion, as I understand it, obviously, is slanted in the direction that there is a possibility that Vicatea can be bought. And that can never be proven. In my 20-year record of the Oregon legislature, I have been independent. I have been independent of thought and action. I will continue to do that because that is part of my own personal makeup, as well as my responsibility as a legislator.
We now turn the circle, and Senator Atiyah, you may question your opponent now.
Governor, you're on record as supporting significant additional wilderness areas in Oregon. So far, all I have heard from you are generalizations like let's add high alpine areas and rimrock deserts. Rare two recommendations have been on your desk for months. I've made my position clear for months. For months, you've said you needed more time to decide whether we need to increase our massive 1.3 million acres of Oregon wilderness. Are you now ready to tell us what specific areas of the state and exactly how much you want to lock up in formal wilderness?
My policy decision is that I will not recommend for wilderness designations any significant amount of commercial timberland. I had to get, and I have to get, data from the Forest Service before I can make a decision on which areas should be included in the wilderness system. I don't want to divert commercial timberland into the wilderness system. And in fact, some of the boundaries that the Forest Service had drawn, such as the Waldo Lake basin north of Waldo Lake, dipped down into the west side and took in a significant portion of timber. And I asked the Forest Service to redraw their lines so that they cut out the timber and only kept the crest of the Cascades in the wilderness area. This is the reason that I am being thorough and taking the time to properly and accurately do the job so that we can have both a preservation of the timber base for our industry and also preserve the wilderness areas that ought to be preserved in wilderness.
Senator Atiyah?
Governor, I've heard that answer before. Then may I have a clarification? You are suggesting that there be no added timberland in wilderness area. Is that correct?
I said no significant amount of timberland, and this means what it says. It means no significant amount of timberland. For example, in the Waldo Lake wilderness area, the Forest Service had 11 million board feet of annual cut included in the Waldo Lake wilderness area. I thought this was excessive and too much. You obviously cannot take every tree and uproot it and move it out of a wilderness area. But I am insistent in saying that only those high alpine areas in the Rimrock Country and the Rocky Canyons of Eastern Oregon, in my judgment, are suitable for wilderness classification.
It's 5:30 on the West Coast, and live from the KXL News Center, you're listening to a debate between Governor Straub and Senator Atiyah. At about 5:50 in this program, about 20 minutes from now, we'll be having listeners phone in their questions, and we will open those lines up now. The number to call in the Portland area is 231-0750. Repeating that number, 231-0750. You may call your questions in, and we will be taking them here in the KXL News Center, and we will rebroadcast the questions beginning at 5:50 for the two candidates. Now from the wilderness issue, we turn to ballot measure 5, which would establish a program to license denturists. Under current state law, only dentists may fit, make, or repair dentures. Measure 5 would authorize denturists to do the same. Senator Atiyah, you may question your opponent.
Governor, I've read the measure which is before us at some length, and there are so many serious questions regarding this measure that it's hard to choose just a few. But let me ask you one. Can you accept the educational and training standards in this measure which allow technicians without a high school education, without accredited college-level classwork, and without regular medical training to work in patients' mouth, fitting something as important as dentures?
Denturists at this time, without any qualifications at all of an educational or an experience nature, or without being licensed by the state, are making the dentures for dentists to fit. The only difference in the dentures bill is it allows the denturist to do the fitting. He cannot do anything else in the mouth. The dentist must certify that the mouth is suitable for having false teeth applied, and then the denturist can do the job. In British Columbia, where this has been the practice, they have found that the costs have been one half where the denturist can do the work. And I feel that with a high cost of living for senior citizens, that it's important that they have the choice of whether they want to go to a denturist or whether they want to go to a fully licensed dentist. Nobody makes them go to a denturist, but they should have that choice if they want it.
Senator Atiyah, you may follow up now.
Well, I would guess then that the governor can accept those educational and training standards that are in that ballot measure. Now let me ask the other question. Never in my 20-year legislative career have I seen a measure which sets low training and educational standards and then expressly prohibits a department that is going to govern them from ever increasing even these minimal requirements. How can you support this lack of flexibility in this very important area?
I think that 2 years of education in denturism and 2 years of practical experience in denturism is an adequate amount of training for a person to properly perform the technical job of making dentures and fitting dentures. And again, I repeat that nobody is compelled to go to a denturist. It is only those who are of low income, who have very modest resources at their disposal, who should have the right and the choice to go to a denturist if they want to. Where this has been tried in the past has been very successful. The paramedics in Oregon have been very successful in helping the medical profession. In the same manner, I think the denturist would be very helpful in helping the dentist profession.
Our time at KXL is 26 minutes before 6 o'clock. From ballot measure 5, we're going to turn...
Oops.
We have some reverse questions.
Yeah.